Welcome to Lisa and Phil Ruin the Movies with me, Lisa Schmeiser.
And I am your host, Philip Michaels.
What is the title of this podcast again, Phil?
It is Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies.
Or Lisa and Phil Ruin the Movies.
I don't really know. I don't read the memos from this company. We've established that. So what is our topic today? What movie are we ruining today? Or perhaps...
We're not ruining one movie, Phil. We're ruining an entire event.
Let's ruin all the movies.
Let's ruin the Oscars!
Oh!
Yes,
it's the Oscars. It's the night of the year where we honor the great works of cinema, like The Greatest Show on Earth.
Yes, and remind people
and Crash, and Dances with Wolves, and Ordinary People.
And movies, Tomei.
Movies, I think you sit down and watch each anytime you can.
With a look of numb incomprehension.
Yes. So, yes, it's Hollywood's greatest night, the night when all the stars leave the firmament and descend upon the Kodak Theater in Los Angeles.
A night where you can actually drive around the rest of Los Angeles comparatively unmolested.
Mm-hmm. And I think this
we're especially qualified to ruin the Oscars
yes.
this year because Phil has not seen a single Oscar-nominated
movie. Not a one.
No.
Not a single movie.
The man has been laid off since September, and he has not made it to the movies once.
And I've been looking for work and writing, and I don't like going to...
What is this with you in constructive time?
And I don't like... I should point out, I really don't like going to movies in the theater.
Oh my gosh, no, it's the best thing ever. You take the day off of work, or maybe don't work, mm-hmm. and you go to a matinee, and you get your small popcorn, and you shake half a box of Reese's Pieces into it, and then you sit in a theater surrounded by five or six other people who also hate humanity, and you all watch your movie in, like, respectful silence, which is how I saw Birdman.
Okay. Yeah, so you have actually seen two of the Best Picture nominees, I believe.
Yes, I've seen both Birdman and The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Whereas I have finally gotten around to watching the 2013 nominees in rapid succession.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, that Argo holds up well.
I really liked Argo.
I liked Argo as well. Lincoln's okay. Silver Linings Playbook has its moments.
I'm a little irritated that you watched Lincoln without me, because apparently everyone from the cast of Justified was in that movie, and
well,
that alone makes it worth watching.
I think if you wandered by the set that day, Steven Spielberg slapped a giant wig and beard on you and said, "You're in Lincoln now."
Yeah, maybe he's a secret Deadwood fan like so many of us are.
Mm-hmm. So,
they should have had an animation.
You're going to have to take the lead on this, because, as I said, I have watched a grand total of zero movies that... are nominated for the major awards.
Mm-hmm.
If Captain America, the Winter Soldier,
mm-hmm.
was nominated for an award...
This is what Philip Michaels did for Love this year, is he paid for a $60 cab ride to go see Captain America, the Winter Soldier, in the middle of Cape Cod off-season with me, and that was my birthday present. He
mm-hmm.
sat through that movie.
We should also point out it was one of those movie theaters where they bring you dinner to
mm-hmm.
your seat. And
so it was nice.
So it wasn't like I took you to the Cineplex in Mashpee.
No, it was a nice night out, but by the end of that, like, on our cab ride back, you let me know in no uncertain terms you were done with superhero movies for the nonce.
Yes. Well,
which is how you miss Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'm tired of movies where
mm-hmm.
the climax is major cities being destroyed, because, you
mm-hmm.
know,
yeah.
turn on the news, baby,
yeah.
if you find that entertaining.
I don't, is
yeah.
the thing, but I find Chris Evans entertaining.
No, sure.
I find Anthony Mackie entertaining as well.
Well, there you go.
And you and I had a discussion, Phil and I had a discussion on Twitter a couple weeks ago about the difference between a movie star versus an actor or actress, and how you can be both a movie star and an actor, or you can be a movie star, someone who has that ineffable quality of you being unable to take your eyes off of them, or you can be an actor slash actress. And Captain America 2 could better be titled, "Here is your Black Widow movie. This is as close as you're going to get, so shut up about it."
Mm-hmm.
So that was basically it. Anyway, it's not nominated for an Oscar.
I think it might be actually in the technical categories.
Mm, okay.
I'm scrolling.
Looking, talking,
longer. Stretching. Best visual effects, Lisa.
Oh my gosh,
so
you have seen an Oscar
I've seen an Oscar nominee.
All right, so we're...
It's up against Dawn of the Planet of the Apes,
mm-hmm.
Guardians of the Galaxy, Interstellar...
Oh, I've seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
And
Ha-ha.
X-Men, Days of Future Past.
Also seen that, too.
All right.
By this point,
an expert now.
Well, by this point, you guys should realize that for me, nothing is more fun than being able to nip away on an afternoon and go see a matinee. And I often do it to go see movies Phil doesn't want to see, as should be evident by the list. Let's talk about Best Picture, Phil, since you have seen
okay.
none of them. First up is American Sniper, which, as I understand it, is the story of Bradley Cooper bravely gaining a lot of weight.
Yes.
And
shooting people.
Mm-hmm.
And from reading the reviews, because I do read reviews of movies so that I can form opinions about them until I see them 3 years later on
yes.
TV.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it's Clint Eastwood's best work in years.
Mm-hmm. Which is saying something, because he's turned in some pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
I think people are just relieved it wasn't 120 minutes of him yelling at a chair.
it's one of those, it's the Rorschach movie where you come in with your preconceived political leanings and judge the movie accordingly.
Yeah,
and,
my Facebook feed has been pretty illustrative on that.
Yeah, and normally it would be one of those movies where it was making the late charge because it mm-hmm. wasn't on anyone's radar, and then it got
I think it's kind of
a whole bunch of nominations,
politics,
but
though.
Now I think no one will give it awards.
Yeah, because I think people don't want to ignite a tedious national debate.
Yeah.
So the next movie is Birdman, in which Michael Keaton bravely walks down the streets of Manhattan in his underwear.
Mm-hmm. You've seen it?
I've seen it. I hate the score, but, and I'm sure this is where people tweet to tell me I'm wrong, because why else would the internet exist? But I really enjoyed Keaton's performance. I also enjoyed Edward Norton's performance. And if you ask me, I think he made the movie. And who else did I like in that movie?
Emma Watson. Emma Stone.
No, I did not. I thought she was overplayed. It was Naomi. Naomi, what's her face?
Okay.
Naomi. She's married to Leo Schreiber. Naomi Watts. Yes.
Naomi Watts. That's where I got Emma Watson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because she plays Mary Jane Watson. So it's really all just there are six names in Hollywood and they're endlessly recycled. Anyway, Naomi Watson and Norton, who are also in The Painted Veil together, which you should watch when it's on cable. They were in this. They were very good. Michael Keaton is phenomenal in it as well. So is the lady who played Beattie on The Wire, whose name I can also not remember. And I think she got nominated for an Oscar a couple of years back. So really, it all just comes back to award shows. We'll skip that. Birdman might be one rented on iTunes when it comes out.
I'll probably see that.
Yeah.
I'll see American Sniper when it's on TV.
So there's Boyhood, which I'm avoiding because I don't want to feel things.
Yeah, no. I will never see Boyhood.
No.
Don't need to see Boyhood.
No.
Coming of age story. Came of age myself, so I don't need to see someone else come of age.
No. All right, so we'll skip to the Grand Budapest Hotel, which I saw.
And it is sitting on our TIFO waiting for me to watch it.
It is. It is. Well, it's a Wes Anderson film, and my take on Wes Anderson films is they're often a whole lot of fun to look at, but there's not a lot there. It's like a beautiful candy heart box where it's gorgeous, and then you look inside, and it's half empty.
So here's my Wes Anderson grand theory that I formulated in the last 30 seconds.
Uh-huh.
So it will hold up to peer review. I think Rushmore is one of the best comedies of the 90s.
Mm.
I would stack it up against almost everything, but maybe Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Maybe Groundhog Day is better, but Rushmore I'd put up against any comer for the 1990s. I also very much enjoyed The Royal Tenenbaums. You and I saw that in the theater. Yes, I do go to movies in the theater sometimes.
Occasionally.
And what I mostly remember about that movie is you laughing at a funny moment in the movie, and a lady next to us who just wasn't having this movie whatsoever gave you the dirtiest look I've ever seen a human being give another.
I wonder if she's the woman who sat next to me when I burst into laughter during Troy.
Well,
because that was another lady who had a problem with me laughing in a movie.
But again, your Troy laughter was inappropriate given the let me back up. It was quite appropriate given the quality of Troy.
Troy was one of the best comedies of 2003.
Yes.
It was great.
Troy is a very, very funny movie. It's not meant to be funny.
Oh my God.
So anyhow, love the Royal Tenenbaums, even if that one lady didn't like it, or you, apparently.
Well, I'm sorry if my enjoyment of her art house film got in the way of her art house film.
Yeah. And then you and I went to see, again, in the theater, The Life Aquatic
with Steve Zissou.
And that was when I think I pronounced that I was done with Wes Anderson forever and
so, like,
ever.
Here's the great thing about Wes Anderson films, is they're basically all alike, where you have a protagonist who has profound father issues, and either reconciles with a father figure or adopts one, reaches catharsis and emotional maturity as a young man, and then is able to shed the father figure and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Women are always highly ornamental and or cryptic. He's terrified of old women, so they always hold tremendous positions of power in his film. Young women are trophies. They're inscrutable. You can have communion with a young woman, but you're never really going to understand what goes on in her head. I'm not sure he thinks of women as entirely human. To him, they may just be like highly mechanized ornaments. Anyway, if you can accept these limitations in any Wes Anderson film, And you can accept the little cartouche dollhouse world that he lives in. It's an enjoyable experience. It's like watching an animated museum display. And I'm fascinated by the level of dedication to artifice that he has.
So what you're saying is run, don't walk to see the Fantastic Mr. Fox.
No, what I'm saying is we should move on to The Imitation Game.
Okay.
Which, as I understand it, the moral of that movie is please don't persecute people who save you from the Nazis.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. The movie that I've not seen,
uh-huh.
and may one day see,
uh-huh.
it reminds me in many ways of The King's Speech, which you and I actually did see.
That wasn't really a movie. That's like a Lifetime movie.
It has the feel of a TV movie that you sit back.
So you know what I remember about you and I seeing The King's Speech?
Mm-hmm.
Is how Guy Pearce sweeps in and steals the movie for 5 minutes, and when he's gone, you're like, well, that is the movie I'd rather be seeing.
I wish Guy Pearce were still here.
I wish we were seeing a movie about the abdication from his point of view.
Wish Guy Pearce hadn't have abdicated so quickly.
I know, right? And I worry that The Imitation Game, Crash Bandicoot, or whatever his name is, notwithstanding.
Otter Bendersnatch.
The Fromius Bendersnatch?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm sure he's magnificent in it, because he seems like he can act, but...
Bertrand Cumberbund.
Mm-hmm. Whatever he is. He's in it. He seemed very intense in the previews. I'm not sure I want to watch it because human rights abuses make me really angry.
Yeah.
And, again, I don't like to feel things.
Mm-hmm.
It gets in the way of my laughing at movies and irritating other people.
Yep.
So, in the category of let's not feel anything ever again, Selma!
Selma! No,
So this is one of those cases where Selma gets nominated for Best Picture, but they completely ice out the director. And they completely ice out all the performers, and they give it the, oh, you, sing for us, people, sing. We're going to feel good about this.
Nominated for a song, yes.
Yeah, I smell shenanigans.
Well, this is complicated somewhat by the Academy's decision to broaden out the Best Picture nominees
to 10.
As many as 10. They only went to 9 this year.
8.
8?
Yes.
Okay. 8, and that uh-huh. seems off.
Yeah.
But, so people are going to get shut out of the director category. That said, it seems like you'd nominate the director of that movie, since everyone seemed to like that movie.
Yes. Wasn't like, oh my, there's this movie about Martin Luther King Jr., and it's okay, but that song is transporting. No, the movie was really...
Seems like you'd nominate... I don't know her name off the top of my head. It's
yeah.
it's a lady director, which,
yes.
again, holds its own... special connotations in Hollywood.
No, African-American lady director.
Well, and so there you go again.
Yeah.
Seems like you would have given her the nod over, say, the Imitation Game guy.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they nominated Bennett Miller, who directed me to an Academy Award-nominated
mm-hmm.
appearance in Moneyball.
Yes.
My old friend Bennett Miller mm-hmm. was nominated for director for Foxcatcher, which, again...
Did not make into Best Picture.
Not nominated for Best Picture, even though there were 2 slots available.
Yeah, so that's just weird.
It's very weird. Like,
yeah.
Boy, this movie is directed so great. Well, is it one of the 10 best movies of the year?
No. It just makes the Best Director category, which we can get to in a little bit. It just makes it look like more naked campaigning and cronyism, and
yeah.
that devalues the award, if you ask me.
Okay.
I'm
going to go see.
Yeah.
Or at some point.
Oh, I will too.
Yeah.
Because there's stuff to get angry at, and there's stuff to get angry at. I think my problem is I'm probably going to overly identify with Alan Turing and end up a sobbing incoherent mess.
Yeah.
I mean, I cried during Ray Bradbury short stories, for God's sake, so this is right in the feels. The next one is The Theory of Everything,
mm-hmm.
which stars Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones as Stephen Hawking.
And Mrs. Hawking.
Whom he threw over.
Yeah.
So, the problem is I don't want to watch a doomed love story like this, because...
I have no interest in this movie whatsoever.
Yeah, it's sort of like at the end of Goodfellas when you find out that Karen finally divorces Henry and you're like, what?
Now that works for me.
Yeah.
That works for me. The one area that it doesn't work is, what did it finally take?
Yeah, I know. But this is the thing, is the whole theory of everything is you have this whole story about how she stands by him as he has this horrible progressive disease, and now I'm going to leave you. And wait, what? Why am I watching a movie about that?
Yeah.
So.
No interest in it.
Uh-uh. And the final one is Whiplash, in which the horrific neo-Nazi from Oz evidently goes to Juilliard.
Is he a horrific neo-Nazi in that movie? J. Jonah Jameson, professor.
J. Jonah Jameson.
The guy from the farmer's commercial is yelling at me about deductibles.
Okay, I love J.K. Simmons.
I know, he's great.
And to be frank, he's the only reason I sat through the entirety of Juno, is because I thought
Juno.
Oh, we both hated that.
And I hated that so much.
And I thought
Juno was great for about 10 minutes, and then you said, hey, stop doing this.
And, well, he and Allison Janney were so great in their scenes together.
They were very good. And Ellen Page is all right.
Well, the problem is they were all saddled by this hideous dialogue.
It was all the terrible things they were saying.
Because Ellen Page was really great in Juno, which is Mrs. Ben Affleck. Jennifer Garner, is that her last name?
Yeah. Yes.
Jennifer Garner is so great in Juno.
Jason Bateman is good in Juno.
Yeah.
All the actors are quite good in Juno.
It's just the words.
And they say stupid things.
Oh, it's just.
They talk like no one in the world talks.
Inanities dropping out of their mouth holes. But anyway, J.K. Simmons is just phenomenal in that movie.
Inanities dropping out of their mouth holes.
And
just wanted to repeat that for the benefit of the listeners.
But, you know, again, my first exposure to him was as Schillinger on Oz.
Yep.
Where he's terrifying. Oh, he's just... Oh, it's riveting, and you always feel guilty for enjoying watching it because he does horrible things to people consistently.
He's also the best thing about the worst Coen Brothers movie.
Oh, O Brother, Where Art Thou?
No, Lady Killers.
Oh, Lady Killers, that's right.
Lady Killers.
I'm sorry, I mixed them up.
No, I like O Brother.
I was thinking of Lady Killers.
He got the titles confused.
Well, Mountain Girl and I. Yeah. Oh, God, he's so funny.
He is terrific in that terrible movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, Opie from Sons of Anarchy is in the Lady Killers.
That's true, he is.
Yes.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're saying is Run, Don't Walk to see the Lady Killers.
J.K. Simmons and almost anything else.
So who's your pick of the two movies you've seen?
Neither of them, because the movie, it's going into Boyhood.
It's going to Boyhood.
There's no question.
It is totally going to Boyhood.
Because it's going to be, he spent years making this, and one of the things, I don't particularly care for Linklater's movies, and I say I've seen, I think, four by this point, but one of the things I do find particularly interesting is how he is willing to see how a story unfolds over time. Like, I hate those Ethan Hawke, Julie Delpy movies. Like, I sat through them all once and hated love after every single one of them. But
you're going to have to turn in your Gen Xer card.
I am.
They're a posse is forming now. Who didn't like After Sunset?
And they're
get
all,
her!
And they're all dressed in Winona Ryder's floral dresses from Reality Bites. Yeah, yeah.
Not a Richard Linklater picture.
Let me put on my platform shoes and get a head start. One of the things I do like is his willingness to keep returning to Celine and Jesse and telling their story at different stages of their life, and his contention that the stories that you tell about people as they get older are just as interesting as the stories that you tell as they're turning into the people they're going to become. So I can respect that, and I like that he took Boyhood and was like, listen, just the process of living a daily life as a family is an interesting story. It's a radical contention. I really hope this doesn't open the door to a flood of copycat movies. And I also think that this movie might... I'm surprised more people aren't talking about Michael Apted's work in context with this movie, because he's got that whole series of...
7-Up.
Yeah, and then I've also got the DVD copy of the marriage documentaries he did.
Right.
Where he returned to the marriages over a couple of years, different years periods, too. Mm-hmm. So there's that his contention that it's interesting to see how people's lives change and what directions, and
it's very thematically similar to what we are led to believe that Boyhood is about, since I haven't seen the picture and will not see the picture, even when it's declared the best picture of the year, which it will be, because there's no drama this year to the awards.
No, and although he's up for best director, my guess is that the dude who did Birdman, whose last name I can't pronounce, is going to get it, because it's basically one single tracking shot through the entire movie, and it's got a hideous, annoying percussive dress.
I think he's likely to win it.
Iñárritu?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't... I'm so sorry, you guys. I've just read his name. I've never actually heard it.
Because the rumor I hear is that voters split the vote between director and picture to say, hey, both are equally fine movies. That said, I could see, like, the presenter of the Best Director Award, pulling a Jack Palance and going, screw it, Linkletter, which is that's the rumor that Marissa Tomei won Best Supporting Actress for My Vinny.
Is because
My Cousin Vinny, not My Vinny.
My Vinny actually sounds like that's something.
My Vinny would be a much better movie.
It makes it sound then like he's disabled and she takes him on a road trip across the country carrying him in her arms or something.
Again, sounds like a Oscar bait movie. But the rumor is
Oscar bait movies, let's move on to Best Actress, where Julianne Moore is going to walk away with it because she plays a lady with early onset Alzheimer's.
Yeah, you play a diseased person, you get an award.
What is my sense of self? I'm going to act like someone who's in a liminal state. And everyone's like, oh, yes, and I'll just write it all down.
The person I feel bad for is Reese Witherspoon, who apparently ugged it up for her role, thinking,
people will forget that I laid the smackdown on a Georgia cop ball. Do you know who I am?
Yeah.
He pulled me over for drunk driving.
Exactly.
And the thing is, I read the Cheryl Strayed book.
Yeah, you have opinions about this.
Well, I read the Cheryl Strayed book and I loved it. And I think the reason that Wilde had an early surge is because that movie is pure fantasy, because it depicts a woman who is able to walk away from her entire life for 3 months without children, without husband, without job, without anything tethering her down. And that's a really unusual state to be in. So you're kind of living vicariously through her, even though she's having this big catharsis over her mom dying and her recreational heroin habit and the break of her marriage. And she had this life that was complicated in all these really bad ways, and it's uncomplicated by the end of the walk, blah, blah, blah. But really, it's the fantasy on the earth. I would like to go for a walk in nice places for 3 months.
Mm.
You know, I bet I could look like Reese Witherspoon with those toned Pilates legs if I got to walk for 3 months without some kid hanging off with me every day. that's basically the movie.
I'm surprised Rosamund Pike isn't getting more play for this award. Because everyone seemed to like Gone Girl. And this was its only nomination, really.
Yeah, it was. Well, she did a great job, but Amy is a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always the, do you want to give the award to somebody who convincingly plays a crazy homicidal woman? Or
Charlize Theron in Monster?
Oh, Charlize Theron ugged it up, though, remember?
Yeah, okay.
The thing is if the woman is ugly on the inside and she's pretty on the outside, she has to get her comeuppance in some way. She doesn't have to intimidate Ben Affleck into staying with her.
And the comeuppance is that she will not get an award.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean, Felicity Jones gets the nod because, British person. And Marion Cotillard gets it for 2 days, one night.
I think because they have to have 5 nominees.
Yeah. Well, she was apparently... Well, the thing is the stuff I kept reading was Marion Cotillard... Or Cotillard?
Cotillard, I would guess.
Anyway, the French actress who's not Amelie...
And who's been a Best Actress winner in the past?
Yes. She was apparently much better in The Immigrant.
Ah.
Which is a movie that, for reasons known only to Miramax, they decided not to back in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly because the person she was acting as was Joaquin Phoenix, and the idea of unleashing him on award season makes even the most seasoned publicist go, ah! So, anyway, Best Actress will be... I was
Julianne Moore.
I was a ginger Alzheimer's patient.
Yes.
Best Actress, Steve.
Finally getting the recognition for Big Lebowski that she should have gotten so many years ago.
She checks in to see what condition her condition is
mm-hmm.
in. So Best Actor, we're on to Steve Carell, who bravely puts on a fake nose, Bradley Cooper, who bravely puts on fake weight, Benedict Cumberbatch, who
bravely pretends to be an Earth human.
Yes, Michael Keaton in his underwear, and Eddie Redmayne, who has to sit in a chair.
It's going to be Michael Keaton.
Because it's one of those he-deserves-it thing. There was this really dispiriting article in New York Magazine you should all go out and read right away, because it's about how Jeff Bridges came to be your Oscar winner a couple of years ago for I'm a Drunk Country Singer,
right.
Whatever movie that was. And it talks about how it's not necessarily about the best performance. It's always, it's his year, or his time has come, or it's really in recognition for your body of work.
This is why I've sort of soured on the Oscars.
Yeah.
I used to really care.
Yeah.
And I can't remember caring for the better part of a decade.
No.
And sometimes I wonder why, because I cared very deeply about sports, which is just as stupid a thing to care about.
I don't know sports.
No.
Sports is with teams, though. It's you can't argue against a home run.
Yeah.
Like the A's don't win a game because their time has come. The A's win a game because they hit more balls and caught more balls and prevented the other team from...
Well, this is my point. I've been thinking about it. Well, Phil, you have just as little stake in who wins the World Series as who wins Best Picture, and yet you care about it more. And I think the reason why is because it's...
It's a purer competition.
It's quite it's not Harvey Weinstein going, I think the Red Sox should win this year, so I'm going to put some money behind them.
Yeah.
That's a terrible Harvey Weinstein imitation. But so anyhow, your point is well taken, that it's basically at this point just two places, the better ads in Hollywood Reporter, and who has the narrative and who has the...
And people want to give it to Michael Keaton because they like him. And,
he's a nice guy.
Well, he's versatile. And he's done a lot of good work, and he's on a comeback narrative right now. So,
So it's narrative.
They're not making Mr. Mom 2.
No.
So, although they're talking about a Beetlejuice sequel, which just terrifies me.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not good.
No, none of that is good. Although I would fully support seeing more of Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
That said, this is the one category, this and Best Director, where there's some element of doubt. So you could see a Bradley Cooper or a Eddie Redmayne.
Best Supporting Actress.
Getting an award here.
So Best Supporting Actress, we can pretty much just ask ourselves why Meryl Streep bothers coming to these things.
Yeah.
Like, do they keep nominating her because she's reliably polite to people and can be counted on to behave herself at these awards or something? Because she's been nominated like 16 times, and her ratio of nominations to win is like 1 to 5. And if you ask me, if someone said to me, Lisa, you have to go to 15 company dinners in a row, and only once out of every 5 are they going to serve a dessert that you really like. Which is basically what this is. You're going to, like, the biggest shareholders meeting in your industry.
I'm reminded of the Emmys, where, like, John Larroquette used to have to beg them not, please don't give me the award anymore.
Yeah.
I'm tired of accepting your award.
I mean, what I'm guessing is that she lets herself, is that she goes in because this keeps her asking price competitive. And one of the things that came out of the Sony hack was how studios will gleefully and without compunction pay women a heck of a lot less than they pay men most of the time. So Meryl can go into the negotiations and say, I get nominated for Oscars on the regular, so this is my asking price, despite the fact that I'm over 60, and you people think I should have been put on an ice floe by the laws of Hollywood. But still, it has to suck. I can't imagine these things are fun to go to. You're stuck there for 4 hours.
You can't pick your nose because at any moment a TV camera is going to be on you.
Oh my God, yeah. And people have to heckle what you wear, and there's... Yeah. Crying and feelings. Anyway, long story short,
this is an awful lot of words to talk about a category that Patricia Arquette is going to win.
Right. So let's move on to Best Supporting Actor, which has Robert Duvall from The Judge, which is the only nomination that movie got. Because do you remember like the 10 minutes this fall when it was, oh, Robert Downey Jr. is branching out from Iron Man and having father issues with somebody other than Mr. Stark Sr. So it's Robert Duvall, it's Ethan Hawke, Edward Norton, Birdman, which, again, phenomenal job that he did. Mark Ruffalo and Foxcatcher, phenomenal hairline. And J.K. Simmons.
I think it's worth noting that there are two Hulks nominated in this category.
No.
And one J.J. Jameson.
I really wonder if Eric Bana should be invited to present just to get your whole trifecta going.
Yes.
I would love that.
And sort of and a digital...
And like a CGI thing?
Yes. Yeah. With, I'm blanking on the TV show that I used to watch all the time. Bill Bixby.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Like a holographic Bill Bixby?
Holographic Bill Bixby. Like
Or perhaps Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah.
This is a whole lot of words for us to say to J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons is going to win this award,
and
everyone.
I can't think of any... It makes me happy because I love J.K. Simmons. Haven't seen the movie. No plans to see the movie. I'm sure the rest of the men did a fine job. This seems like a really...
Best Supporting Actor is usually the most interesting category for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Probably because dudes get more interesting parts than ladies.
Yeah.
And this is where...
They don't get the girlfriend roles for some reason.
No.
I wonder why.
No.
So, moving on to be honest, I really don't give a, the screenplay is Birdman, Boyhood, to which I have to ask, what screenplay is there for Boyhood exactly other than And Now You Age?
Yeah.
Again, haven't seen it. Foxcatcher.
I have a feeling this is where your Grand Budapest Hotel gets its respectful
nod. It's got this huge shout out to Proust all the way through it.
Yeah.
So it's literary. It makes people feel smart when they get the illusion. And there's also Nightcrawler, which looks horrific, and I will watch because I kind of want to see Jake Gyllenhaal when he looks like he wants a Snickers bar.
Mm-hmm.
Best Adapted Screenplay is American Sniper, The Imitation Game, Inherent Vice, which looks excruciating.
Yeah, no one.
The Theory of Everything and Whiplash.
This seems like a Whiplash kind of category.
I think it's either American Sniper or The Imitation Game, because both of them have things to say, and it's always safer to have things to say in categories that are about nerds writing things.
I think American Sniper people will shy away from giving it the award because of the some of the issues with the veracity of the source material.
This is true.
He said delicately.
That is a very
to avoid angry mail.
Yeah.
Send angry mail to the host, Lisa Schmeiser.
No, I thought Philip Michaels was the host.
No. Yeah. Not when there's angry mail.
We live at the same place, by the way. So here's the only category where I can actually say anything based on having seen a few of the movies.
Oh wow.
Best visual effects.
Ew.
Where the nominees are Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Guardians of the Galaxy, Interstellar, and X-Men Days of Future Past. So, I've seen three of the five nominees. I can't remember why.
Well, you don't have 8 hours to go see Interstellar.
I was going to say, I can't remember why I didn't see it, and then you reminded me. It's because I have a full and active life.
Yeah, you really have to block out a week of your time, apparently.
That's the Christopher Nolan one, right?
Yes.
Okay, so
Matthew McConaughey.
So we basically know that the visual effects are going to be technically precise and pristine and kind of soulless and riveting to watch because he has his own closed box aesthetic that goes with it. And I say this as somebody who really does like Christopher Nolan movies. The one that I like that I feel doesn't get much attention at all is The Prestige.
Yeah.
Which I think is my favorite Christopher Nolan movie.
I've seen the first two Batman movies, and I've seen Inception.
Yeah, we saw Inception together. And but no, The Prestige is oh, we should set that up on the DVR. I love that movie. I love it so much. And
in this episode of Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies, Lisa will talk about household chores that we need to perform. Oh, we should pick up some bread.
No, we don't have enough bread. Anyway, to get back to visual effects, we can eliminate Interstellar because I haven't seen that. So I would have liked to have seen Dawn of the Planet of the Apes because I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'd like to see what it looks like when our animal overlords finally take it over. But I'm only qualified to say how Captain America stacks up against Guardians of the Galaxy, stacks up against X-Men Days of Future Past. And my suspicion is that the Planet of the Apes is going to win it because this is the closest Andy Serkis gets to an Oscar. And it's going to be, thank you, people, for making us think that Andy Serkis should get an Oscar. If it's up against the three Marvel properties, as it were. And I know the X-Men are with Fox, and we can talk about that all later, because we all love to correct people about comics trivia on the internet. I think that Captain America, the Winter Soldier, had the best effects of the three of them.
Interesting. I was going to guess X-Men, because
there's a beautiful sex
because you're destroying RFK Stadium, and what man has not dreamed of leveling RFK Stadium?
Okay, there's a beautiful set piece in X-Men Days of Future Past where the Quicksilver character, who is notably not named Quicksilver because, again, lawyers and Sony versus Fox versus Marvel and who owns what. Anyway, the non-Quicksilver character, who's played by Evan Peters, does this beautiful run around of enclosed area and plucks bullets and plays jokes, and it's all done time in a bottle, and it's beautiful and flowing, and it really does give you a sense of how he perceives time and speed versus everybody else, and it's wonderful. It is by far the visual highlight of the movie, and the rest of it, frankly, is just kind of a lot of Michael Fassbender floridly gesturing and looking pretty campy, let's be honest, and, you know, the dude who plays Charles Xavier looking like he's got a headache, and the problem with Guardians of the Galaxy is so much of it is so heavily CGI done that you can kind of tell that there's a lot of green screening going on. Captain America had the most realistic integration, even though they had helicarriers dropping from the sky. The battle sequences I thought were pretty well done, and there were a lot of them.
Yeah.
So
now the monkey movie is going to win.
The monkey movie is going to win because, again, it's the closest Andy Serkis gets to getting an Oscar.
Yep.
It's everybody feeling guilty over not giving him a nomination.
Yep.
But I'm gonna say it though. Captain America had the best visual effects because those are the most immersive, and the fight sequences seem plausible to me. And when you think about how many people got thrown over highway overpasses, or had cybernetic arms, or took bullets and had flawless hair, like that says a lot.
Mm.
So let's see. Are there any other categories we want to talk about?
I think that the song for Selma is an absolute dead solid lock to win that category.
We're not that racist. Yeah. We love a song.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Bad luck, Lego Movie. Yeah. The one nomination you got was going to be... we could talk about an animated movie.
Yeah, there's the Best Animated Feature, which notably does not have the Lego Movie, yeah, also on our DVR to look at later. Mm-hmm. It does have Big Hero 6, The Box Trolls, How to Train Your Dragon 2, Song of the Sea, and The Tale of Princess Cayuga.
Box Trolls. Box Trolls.
You're thinking about the Key and Peele sketch, aren't
you? Yes, I am.
Yeah. My vote's for Big Hero 6, just because Disney's on an upswing with animation.
Yes.
And they've been batting with some really strong contenders.
It's probably going to be Big Hero 6, unless it's How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Yeah.
Numbers. Numbers are very popular in movies, Lisa, okay. I find.
I'll take that for you. So here is the sad commentary on you and I, which is that we know nothing about any of the documentary films.
Yeah. I think documentaries are usually ones that you learn about after the fact. I think that's one of the nice things about... If there's something good about the Oscars, it's that it casts light on documentaries that you might otherwise overlook. For instance, I didn't see The Times of Harvey Milk when it was in the theaters. I saw it after it won its Academy Award.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah. I made you watch that a few months ago.
You didn't make me watch it.
I put it on and you were in the room.
Yeah.
And you were riveted as anyone who watches...
Because I was also watching Angels in America around that time, too.
As anyone who watches that documentary would be. And it's not
it's
the sort
of... It's a fascinating documentary.
It is not
it's
the
so
sort
good.
Of thing I think that... Yeah. The vast majority of moviegoers are going to have a chance to see in the theater. Yeah. But the fact that it gets A, nominated, and B, won, exposes it to a wider audience. So there, pay attention to who wins and who is nominated for the documentary.
Because there's your to-do list
Oscars,
for 2015.
Yeah, that gives you something to track down.
But you know what? This whole Oscars thing, actually, I think there's two important points here. And one is that you hate going to the movies because, one, you hate other people, and two, it's really expensive.
Yep.
And
also, when I'm watching movies at home and I need to pee, I can pause the movie.
Yeah, so this actually raises something about the Oscars this year, which is if some of them were available to watch at home, and we could have, in theory, done a lot of Oscar candidate watching over the last 2 months at home.
Mm-hmm.
But I get the sense that the experience of being an American moviegoer is deeply in flux right now, because...
Yeah.
You do now have a generation of people who have grown up with DVRs and the expectation that media is tailored to their environment, not the other way around. And the second thing is wow, we really don't give a crap about the Oscars.
No.
Like, I don't care about the dresses, because we've had a relentless parade of skinny people in beautiful dresses for the last 6 weeks, and, like, I'm visually fatigued from seeing it all. I don't care about the horse race, because at this point, it's been so money-balled, you can call up 8 different articles and they'll tell you what it means when somebody wins a BAFTA versus winning a Critics Circle Award versus winning the IFC Award or whatever it's called.
Nate Silver has done the math.
Yeah, it's boring and predictive, and I don't want to have to watch to see how it works out. There are no surprises. It's way too safe now.
Yep.
And safe is boring. And I also resent the idea that I'm supposed to be invested in a race that's highly political and highly subjective and in no way an actual indicator of what's going to contribute to the craft and stand up over time.
They may finally have found a half-decent host, however.
With Neil Patrick Harris?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. He's a consummate entertainer.
He's an entertainer. He's he can work a room. He can be funny without turning the audience that's in the building against
him. Oh, do you remember how the year that Jon Stewart hosted and, like, he lost that audience in the first 15 minutes?
Every host that...
Well, here's the problem with this. It's the same problem is there's entirely too much respect for the institution.
Yeah.
And this was my
every
problem.
Host I've, every host I've ever liked...
Mm-hmm.
Every host I've ever liked has been one that just goes over like a fart in church in that award ceremony, because they're the ones who go up there and it's David Letterman saying this is ridiculous, or Chris Rock saying these movies are stupid. And,
although note that Chris Rock did not bother saying a darn thing about how dumb the SNL 40 reunion was.
Well, because he knows on which side of
his bread is buttered.
Yeah.
We're
recording this a day after the Saturday Night Live.
And we watched it last night, just kind of gawping in disbelief.
Yeah, I found it kind of... I found it mostly sad.
Tedious.
Well, sad, I mean, and painful.
Well, there's the sad in the sense that, oh, God, the icy hand of time is going,
well,
to,
sure.
is going to clench its fingers.
Time waits for no man, especially a not-ready-for-primetime player.
Yeah, so there's the whole, oh, intimations of mortality when gazing upon the visage of Bill Murray.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also the whole point to comedy is not, oh, we're here to revere and uphold an institution and to tell you that pop culture as you see it now should be uncritically feted and lauded. Good comedy is subversive, and it does something new.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take itself too seriously. And a 3.5 hour long pay-in to a show that's been around for 40 years, where it's wholly ironic.
Not only that, a show that
mm-hmm.
rose to fame by tweaking the established precepts of comedy.
And now, hooray, we're the establishment now. And,
yeah.
like, nobody commented on that shift.
And now it's we sat in on a company dinner.
Yeah, it's hooray, we're the establishment. Here's to 40 years of dominating mediocre films. And
yeah.
It was disturbing and depressing, and the nostalgia wallow was just...
Yeah.
How could all of these funny people not... want to say anything about that? Not a one of them wanted to say a thing about that.
I think the most tone-deaf thing of the evening for me was when you had people who weren't in the cast
uh-huh.
performing characters.
Oh, yeah.
Largely of deceased people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, how, just that felt so...
Forced.
Forced.
There's no passing of the torch. Emma Stone's not the next Rosanna Dana.
Yeah. Melissa McCarthy is...
Hooray!
As the Chris Farley
look, everybody,
character.
It's a fat person falling through a table.
Yeah.
Ah, ah.
Mm.
Yeah. No, it's, I did enjoy the Weekend Update segment, mostly because I like to imagine the ghost of John Belushi screaming in pain, since he was notoriously open about how little he thought of women's ability to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, screw you, Belushi.
Yeah.
I liked that moment. But, and then I was confused as to why Miley Cyrus was wearing a 65-year-old grandmother's outfit when she got up to...
Well, there was that.
Yeah. But no, it was... There's, ooh, look at the red carpet on the way to the 40th anniversary thing. And then, ooh, look at these retrospectives of this and that. And they even had the obligatory, and now a moment to remember all of our old dead friends thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like a mini Oscars. And it had the same overweening, humorless, out-of-perspective... self-negating sense of purposelessness that I now associate with the Oscars.
I can't argue with anything you've said.
I love hearing those words come out.
Yes, those are the most beautiful words in the human language, aren't they?
Say them again, honey.
I can't argue with anything you've said. Besides,
it's time to end the podcast.
We've gotten a little far afield.
We're
no longer ruining movies. Now we're ruining your cultural touchstones, and that simply is not in our brief. So
I think it was Empire Builders.
Oh,
Lisa and Phil ruined everything. Everything!
On behalf of Lisa Schmeiser, I'm your host, Philip Michaels, of Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies.
Good night.
Saying good night, and keep watching anything but the Oscars.
Mm-hmm. Live tweet us your suggestions for alternate entertainment.